It's Download here on WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman. Well, in less than a week, we got a little baseball. I would say the opening day is next Monday? Anyway, we got a week. You could tell tempers are flaring if you saw the Madison Bumgarner, Jason Hayward dust up over nothing. The miscommunication. You kind of can understand that these guys want to get at it. This, plus the fact that the Sweet 16 is at the United Center, means it's a perfect night for WGN Sports' Sam Penjanovic. Sam, good to see you.
Good to see you. I'm flipping through my 2016 Midwest Regional program.
Uh-huh.
It's more than 60% ads. There's literally 40% content. Look, you got a full page with an ad, and then, oh, there's a little bit of script on this page.
Style over substance, man. That's the Sweet 16. Okay, so you were just at the United Center.
Yes.
You got to see the first game, Northern Iowa.
No, that was Virginia and Iowa State.
Iowa State. I'm sorry about that.
The second Fred Hoiberg team that can't play defense.
Yeah, right. There it is.
Iowa State, they didn't guard anybody. Virginia had 84 points. I think at one point Iowa State was down 12-2, and then it just, I mean, they clipped it to like 6 at one point, but they were never in control.
Well, let me ask you, because it seems like, you know, we talked about this was the year of the underdog. There are going to be more teams coming through. But once you get to this level, it pretty much evens out.
All number one seeds are still alive. And for all the talk about, I feel like every opening weekend we talk about, well, that was the best opening weekend ever, and look how much parity there is. Yet, when you advance it 1 week, you know, today, number one, Virginia rolls Iowa State. North Carolina up by 10 now in Indiana. Yesterday, Kansas rolled. Oregon rolled. So is there a lot of parity, or is it just early because there aren't a lot of really good teams? The cream does rise in every sport, but I think people are sort of taken off the path, and they think because they see an 11 beat a 6,
right,
and then a 12 beats a 5, and then, oh, Michigan State goes down. This is the best year ever, but
it's not.
It evens out, and usually the best teams are still around, and right now you could have all four number ones in the Final Four.
I'm always curious about the behind the scenes at a Sweet 16 or at the United Center right now. I mean, is it packed there? I mean, is there a ton of people that are there to see Virginia and Iowa State or to see Syracuse and Gonzaga?
It depends on the schools, and that didn't really answer it the best way possible. But I think, like, Syracuse, they weren't supposed to be in the tournament, and their fan base is huge. It's all over the country, and Chicago is a great city to go to. So can you take, if you're a Syracuse alum, do you mind taking 3 days, go and hang out in Chicago,
right, watch
a little basketball, and, you know, hey, if the team loses, you're still in Chicago, and it's a nice tourist weekend. You know, I think depends on the teams, but they've got some pretty solid teams as far as fan base. Iowa State is a huge fan base. That place, there were more Iowa State fans than Virginia fans. And I think Cuse has the biggest fan base. But it's cyclical. It depends on who's there.
I went one time to a first round at the United Center. It was an interesting night because it was me. I was really young. I was like maybe like 20 years old. Me, my girlfriend, and my girlfriend's dad. First meeting, right? So I'd watch it. And that was a different kind of thing because it was like every game, you know, like quickly there was another game because it was a first round kind of thing. Do they clear the whole stadium between games, or does a Syracuse fan just sit through both games?
No, it just rolls over, and it's an event ticket, so you have the whole night. I think earlier in the tournament, there's more games, so I think it goes by sessions, if that makes sense. Like, you either have the early session or the afternoon session. By here, it's just one session, and it's a double dip, so you get to go to both games. And it just sort of blends together. I think there were a lot of sections where maybe the Cuse fans weren't there yet because they're probably still at happy hour.
Right.
Rolling in. You know, that's a late tip, too. I mean, the game literally tipped 20 minutes ago. Those people are bombed in there. But it's fun. You know, I'm going to actually go back there after this because it's still, I mean, it's 9:30 at night and they're still in the first half.
It's amazing. I mean, they're only doing two games, and then on Sunday they'll have the one game that the winner goes to the Final Four.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be Virginia, maybe Gonzaga, as Cuse cuts it to three. So, I mean, this night one is more of a coin flip. But at the end of the day, you still have the best team in the region playing in Chicago, and that's sort of a big deal.
So, I mean, no Big Ten left. I mean, this is it. Wisconsin is still playing?
No, Indiana
right
now.
Right.
Against North Carolina.
But not a great showing. I mean, usually we expect Big Ten to be in the Final Four or around the Final Four. There's always a surprise team. I think it was either last year or the year before. It seemed like it was all Big Ten. Not a great showing for the Big Ten.
The Big Ten's best team lost to Middle Tennessee State. That's the Big Ten's postseason. That's Michigan State, and they lost to a team that I don't even think you could name the mascot, could you? Just make something up.
The Chorizos?
You can say Bulldogs and probably get it right. I believe it's the Blue Raiders of Middle Tennessee State.
Sam Finianovich is my guest tonight. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get to the news. When we come back, let's preview the Cubs and the Sox. I have some questions that are still unanswered. You were down in spring training, got a chance to see some of it. You know a little bit more than I do about these teams and can maybe answer some of the questions that are still out there. No one has talked about the fact that the Chicago Cubs, who are on, you know, this sort of mission from God to win the World Series, at the end of that run last year, they couldn't catch a ball in the outfield, right? Kyle Schwarber, I kind of chuckled a little bit when he's on the ground and the ball's getting by him. You're like, what's happening?
And there was the one picture of Soler's face down eating some grass and the ball is on the warning track. You know, he's
and
face
that was
down.
A huge, and that plus the fact that these young guys just like to swing at everything that was thrown at them, especially from the aces. There were still a lot of questions, and I want to know if those questions have been answered. Sam Finianovich, my guest tonight, will do more coming up here on The Download. Stay with us.
One ball, one strike, one out, one run. Doc at the bat, and the kid's what he done. Hit the ball in the back, and the bat in the ball. You should have heard them fans all squall. It's going, this time it's really gone.
All right, we're talking baseball. We're previewing, we're sizing up the two squads here in Chicago, the Cubs and the White Sox, with WGN Radio Sports reporter Sam Finianovich. All right, Sam, so let's talk with the Cubs because, you know, as I mentioned before the break, there were a lot of – I mean, they had an unbelievable, magical season, and it can only go up with all the talent that's so young on this squad, and we did see some free agent pickups. But the Chicago Cubs had some serious question marks at the end of the season. One, left-handed ace pitchers. You see that they didn't do so well against those New York Mets starters.
Power arms.
The power arms.
Guys that came in and threw 95, 96, 97, dialed it up. The Cubs were striking out at record rates at points in that series.
And then the second part, the defense, where you saw a little bit more of the gambling that Joe Maddon did, where he put the bats in the lineup because that was good, and he put a catcher out in left field. And we saw kind of an embarrassing show towards the end of that series where they're making errors that you just don't see in baseball.
Yeah, and that's why they brought in some of the guys that they brought in. You know, they feel like they can shore this offensive lack of base runners by bringing in Jason Hayward, bringing in Ben Zobrist, and putting them, you know, in that lineup. And they're going to probably hit Hayward, I would imagine. It's either maybe second or sixth, depending on where he slides in. And then actually Zobrist could hit second as well. You're going to have Fowler leading off. But when he doesn't play, Hayward could hit first. And they feel like those guys can get on base for the boomer bust guys. And, you know, a Chris Bryant three-run homer is a lot better than a solo homer. So that's the plan. They want guys that can get on base in front of the big boppers and eventually turn those runs in the postseason that, you know, they multiply as opposed to just being, because they had a lot of solo home runs last year in the playoffs, a lot against St. Louis too. Baez had a two-run homer in the playoffs, but a lot of those solo digits on the scoreboard, they hope to improve by bounce.
Now, a lot of rookies, I mean, Chris Bryant, of course, rookie of the year. You had Kyle Schwarber. You had, Jorge Soler.
Well, last year they won the Cy Young. They won the Rookie of the Year and the Manager of the Year.
But the rookie class for the Chicago Cubs, including Javi Baez, what do we expect from them in year two in the majors?
Honestly, and this won't make a lot of people happy, and it sounds like I'm pessimistic, but the game humbles you really quick after that first season. And the best of the best are guys that can sort of avoid that sophomore slump. You know, the arrow is always going up and to the right. For most players that come in and have a little success in year one, historically, statistically, in year two, it tends to come back a little more. You know, balls are hit right at somebody, and maybe you strike out more and walk less. And then the really good players bounce back from that adjustment. It's like the pitchers react to what the hitter did in the year before, and then they're ready to attack with a scouting report. So I think Bryant might be okay. I think he'll have the best year, but I expect regression from Addison Russell at the plate, Schwarber, Baez, Soler.
That's a lot of. I mean, that's a lot of names.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Now, you know, does that mean that they can't hit a baseball? No, but I think they're going to struggle early in the season, and then it gets to, you know, second half of the season, and you need those guys to bounce out of it in order to make the playoffs. That's pressure they didn't have really last year because they had so many wins and it was fresh and it was new. Now the bullseye is on their chest, and it's a different game that way.
So the other question, you know, obviously they can be protected in the lineup with Jason Hayward. He's not a rookie. He's a veteran. You have Anthony Rizzo, who now has moved himself into more MVP status.
He could be the MVP
so
next year.
So maybe you may still see a Kyle Schwarber or Chris Bryant pitch to just for the idea that they don't want to touch a Rizzo. They don't want to touch a Hayward. So it could actually help them that they added some bats. Let's talk about the other side, the pitching staff for the Chicago Cubs. The rotation solidified with John Lackey. So now you got Jake Arrieta coming off a Cy Young season. John Lester, who's got a sore elbow, which is not an issue till it is. My favorite quote of the week last week. It's not an issue till it is.
Yeah, until it's a problem, it's not a problem.
Then you've got John Lackey. Then what? I mean, are the Cubs, what are the Cubs doing in the back end of that rotation?
Well, think of it this way, because in the postseason, it was only Arrieta. Everybody else was sort of off the mark. And you would rather have guys that can win you games in the postseason. You know, I don't care that Kyle Hendricks might be the fourth or fifth starter. In the playoffs, their plan, Theo and Jed, their plan is to throw these three guys at you in a playoff series. Arrieta, Lester, Lackey. You play maybe a six-game series, those guys are throwing five times. That's what's going to matter. It's not going to matter who your fourth and fifth guys really are in the postseason. That's the plan. Look at it more top-heavy than anything else. The other guys in the regular season just have to log innings. Just, you know, give six innings a game, get through the season healthy, and then the big horses will carry you. John Lackey has a World Series ring. John Lester, I believe, has two. And they think they have the best pitcher in the National League in Jake Arrieta. So that's the plan there.
Okay, my next question is about injuries. Every team has them every year. They're going to have guys that go on the DL. You have pitchers who have sore arms, that kind of stuff. Are the Cubs equipped to handle injuries?
In the lineup, yes. They have enough depth. They have enough utility guys that can come in and play multiple positions. Ben Zobrist can pretty much play anywhere on the diamond. They're sort of grooming Javi Baez in that same light, and they hope that he can actually learn a lot from Zobrist. But if a guy goes down, if Russell goes down, they can put Baez at short. You know, if Zobrist goes down, they can put Baez at second. There's so many things. The guys you can't afford to lose, I think, is the best way to answer this. Can't afford to lose Anthony Rizzo. Can't afford to lose Jake Arrieta. Can't afford to lose John Lester.
Mm.
Those are the three guys that have to be healthy in order for you to make the postseason. I'm not even talking about win the World Series.
But you know, it's a long season, and just from someone who's an avid fantasy baseball player, none of these pitchers go a full season anymore without a 15-day stint. I mean, it just seems like that's the way baseball is moving, that injuries are becoming more and more a part of it, especially for throwing, you know, for pitchers. I mean, Tommy John went from, oh, that's interesting, we should give that a name, to every pitcher has to do it as a rite of passage. So, I mean, there is a possibility you're going to see at some point or another a Lester, a Lackey, an Arrieta get on the shelf.
And I think Lackey's 37 now. So, I mean, that arm's been throwing a lot of innings for a long time. John Lester is 32, so he's still got some good solid years left in his prime. Maybe not even in his prime anymore, maybe the back part of the career. The guy that had the meteoric rise is always the one that gets pressure to the moon. And for Jake Arrieta, we just kind of talked about this before he got on the air.
A lot of innings.
What can he do that isn't, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, how does he improve on what he did last season?
It was an amazing season.
In the eyes of the fans, because he won 22 games, his ERA was 1.77, four complete games, three shutouts. He was the Cy Young in the National League. And I think in the second half, his ERA was sub-1.
Well, I think that Jake Arrieta, I mean, I don't think that fans have the expectations that you're going to see that again. But to fashion a career like Adam Wainwright or Roy Halladay was a good example, where he didn't always have an under 2, but one season he did, and then maybe at a 220, maybe at a 3. But the point was, is he kept you in games. He was a gamer, which we saw Jake Arrieta was. And that was the sort of wild card scenario where it was more than just you know, what his ERA.
You're right. He's a completely different guy. He's confident as ever, but it's not arrogant. It's just, it's a self-confidence, and that he can go out there and he can do the job. But when you look at his early numbers in Baltimore, his first couple of years, ERA his first year was 4.66. The next year it was 5.05. The third year it was 6.20, and then he was sent down to the minors. So the fact that he's come in with the Cubs, gotten better 3 years in a row, and has entered his, now he's going to be 30 this year, he's entered the prime of his career, and there's no looking back, I don't think. The only thing that's going to slow him down is an injury.
Last question, wild card in this scenario for this team, Joe Maddon?
I think you'd love to have Joe Maddon in any clubhouse in the game.
So
somebody had this debate with me. You know, how many extra wins is he worth? And he said he's worth 20 extra wins. I don't know if you can really put a number on. Well, he said if he move Russell to short and put Schwarber in the outfield and hit him second or whatever. I said you can't quantify it. I don't know how many he's worth, but I know he wins you way more than he loses you. And that's what I'll say about Joe Maddon. Plus, he keeps all the players fresh and kind of shaking up the lineup day in and day out and always having guys ready. That goes in the bullpen and in the rotation. When you're sharp at work in any profession and it's your turn to come up and deliver, you're ready and you're prepared, and I think that comes from the whole mindset of what Joe Maddon does
with
the clubhouse.
Sam Pinjanovic, WGN Sports. Let's take a break. We come back. We go to the south side, Chicago White Sox. Are they still talking about Adam LaRoche? Are they still doing that?
Did you see the Iowa State fan? He had his thumb up, and then he turned his thumb down. Iowa State fans walking by.
The Iowa State fans here on Michigan Avenue tonight. Sam Pinjanovic in studio. Stay with us.
Let's go, 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 White Sox. Chicago's proud of you.
So download here on WGN Radio. We're doing season previews for Major League Baseball, which starts, I believe, April 3rd. Opening day is April 4th. Sam Pinjanovic, WGN Sports, with us. Talked a lot about the Cubs and their World Series run. Let's talk about the Chicago White Sox.
I thought you were going to say their World Series run like you knew something.
You know, the White Sox early on, USA Today, before the Adam LaRoche stuff, had the White Sox, with a chance to win the division and possibly contend for, an AL pennant. So the White Sox, on paper, people like what they did.
If this makes any sense, and you can try and correct me if I start getting crazy here, I feel like the White Sox the last 4 years could have been in first or in last in the division, and I wouldn't have been surprised.
Right.
Because you have the pitching with Sale and Quintana, and Rodon is awesome, the lefty out of North Carolina State that they got a couple years ago in the draft. I think he went third, and they took Schwarber fourth on the north side. So Rodon was a guy that I know Theo and Jed would have loved to have drafted. That being said, the offense has to do something, anything.
Well, that was the big storyline for the Chicago White Sox was that last year's free agents haul, they brought in everybody from Melky Cabrera to Adam LaRoche, to others who came in and said, we're going to bring in some bats. They failed. They were the worst home run team in the majors and the AL. They were the terrible run producers. They didn't put any offense up. What did they do to get better?
Well, they got a lot younger. I mean, they got rid of Alexi Ramirez. Adam LaRoche has since retired. You know, they brought in Todd Frazier, who they feel can be a big bat for them at third base.
All-star from the Reds.
They feel like that's a guy that can hit 35, 40 home runs in that short porch. Well, in Chicago.
Maybe in the porch. Yeah,
I know that's a lot of home runs now. I mean, the Sox last season had 30 from Abreu, and then nobody else had more than 15. Frazier is a guy that makes everybody in that lineup better because, you know, his insertion just, it makes the lineup more dangerous. Then you can't pitch around Abreu because last season it's like, all right, we'll just throw Abreu five fastballs near the outside corner, and if he doesn't hit one, we know we're going to get the next six guys out, you know, because they just couldn't.
Surprising to me, there's been a lot made of Avisail Garcia.
Right, and Brett Laurie, too, who they brought in, who had a really good year.
He hasn't come. I mean, he had an injury the year before, and there was like concern, but they said, oh, this guy's going to be a monster for the White Sox. And he didn't really pan out. His numbers last year were very disappointing. This year, it doesn't look like he's having a great spring. He kind of got lucky in the sense that Adam LaRoche retired because they slot him in a DH, bring Austin Jackson into the outfield. But that there's too many of those stories on the White Sox like lineup, the idea of these disappointing players.
I asked the question, I think it was last week. I said, when was the last time the White Sox had three outfielders that were homegrown? And I went back to like 04 when it was Rowand, Lee and Ordóñez. Mm-hmm. That's the last time that they had three guys that they actually drafted and developed and all started in the outfield at the same time. So it's been that way. You know, when was the last time the Sox brought in a third baseman that could play every day?
Well, they got one now, right?
Drafted and developed.
Well, they don't seem to be doing that with anybody.
Joe Creedy? I mean, that's 2003.
Name one player on that squad, I mean, on the field, that is a homegrown project. Laurie's at second base.
No.
Abreu's Cuba. Third is Frazier and the Reds. Saladino, maybe? I mean, is he?
Saladino is, but yeah, it's going to be Rollins. Jimmy Rollins is
Jimmy
short.
Rollins.
So the fact
Eaton's in center. You got Garcia came from the Tigers. And in left field is
Melky Cabrera?
Yeah, there's nobody.
So, okay. That tells you everything that you need to know about player development. You know, they can develop pitchers. Their pitchers have been solid. I mean, they've gotten innings out of, you know, like John Garland. I know they didn't draft him, but they turned John Garland into a 20-win pitcher. And Mark Burley was a guy who they developed.
And they're doing it with Carlos Rodon and Chris Sale, obviously.
Jose Quintana, who was a send-off from the Yankees that they got in. Don Cooper is one of the most underrated pitching coaches in the game. He loves it on the south side, and he's not going anywhere. But you need some of these guys to have better years. The thing is, though, we talked about with the Cubs in regression from really good years to maybe average years. I think on the south side of town, you're going to have guys that had awful years sort of regress back toward the middle.
Melky Cabrera.
I mean, Adam Eaton, you know, he had 14 homers, but he hit, you know, 287 as a leadoff hitter. Garcia had 257, Cabrera 273. You know, Tyler Flowers isn't here anymore. You brought in a couple catchers that can hit the ball, and Navarro and Avila. You know, you got rid of Trace Thompson, but you feel like you got better with that trade.
Well, let's talk about the defense for that team, because I remember last year, and there were some times where it's just a lot of walks. They walk Carlos Rodon, who's a tremendous talent, was averaging 5 or 6 walks a game. At
no,
a certain point.
Not that
he
high.
Was.
No
man,
way.
I went to the cell and I watched a game where I'm like, I can't believe he's walked 6 guys in this game.
He led the team in walks with 71.
Yeah, I mean, so you hope that he, you know, is ready to play. Like he's ready to go. But on the defensive side of the ball, they did get better.
I think so, and that starts with Austin Jackson. Like you said, he is probably the best defensive outfielder they have. So when you have a good center fielder, it makes left and right a lot better because the range doesn't have to be as high. They can play closer to the lines. And Jackson's a guy who's going to get to a lot of balls, both over his shoulder, behind him, and then in front of him as well. He's got a good first step. He's extremely quick. So that's good in the outfield. And then up the middle, you know, they feel like they've got guys with Jimmy Rollins and Brett Laurie who are going to be, you know, one of the top 5 double play combos in the league. You know, Alexi Ramirez was good for so many years, but last year he had some off-the-field stuff. There was a lot going on in his personal life, and I think it sort of changed the way that he prepared every day. I don't think he was on his game. I think Rollins is going to be a good defender. And then Abreu at first, not so sure. Not so sure how good he is defensively, but he can hit you 30 homers.
Same question applies on injuries. Are the White Sox equipped to handle some trips to the DL?
No. Next question. No, they just can't. They need guys to have – they need like 4 or 5 guys to have career years for them to make it to the playoffs. I'm not saying that that's not possible, but you need a career year from a guy like Carlos Rodon. You need one, you know, from a guy like Chris Sale. You're going to need one from a guy like Jose Abreu, from Todd Frazier, and maybe one more guy. That's what it's going to take. Uphill battle, absolutely. But when you think 2005, you know, 04, they lost Ordóñez, they lost Carlos Lee, and Frank Thomas was hurt pretty much all of 05, and they won the World Series.
Yeah.
So with that combination of players having career years, anything's possible.
Okay, so the wild card for the White Sox, are they going to get over this Adam LaRoche business? They have to,
I don't know. The kid was such a good leader. He's 14 years old, and he lost a true leader. Are you kidding me with that? And I'm a Sox fan, okay? Like, I grew up on the South Side. When I heard that, I literally spit my root beer everywhere.
Adam Eaton said that,
I was like, what are you
we
talking about?
We lost a leader
about?
In Drake.
A leader of what, the circus? That clubhouse was a joke last year. It was so embarrassing, and you know, you go in there after
how
the
so?
Game.
How so? What do you mean? Like,
they just, you know, losing didn't affect them in really a negative way. You know, they were just kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever. You know, the only guy that was really upset was Chris Sale. Every time he lost, he was ticked. But hey, I don't think losing affected them last year.
Justin, can I ask a quick question? Yeah. Do you mind? Sam, what do you think of Reinsdorf's response to all of the nonsense at spring training? I mean, he came out, he was pretty forceful in what he said to these guys.
He was, and I think that's just him putting his foot down. If you want to go ahead and try and talk again, you know you're gone. That's what that is, Rob. And, you know, there is a lot of respect around this country for Jerry Reinsdorf as an owner and being loyal and, you know, sort of protecting the shield, if you will, protecting the logo, and he's done that with the Bulls. He's done that with the White Sox. That was him putting his foot down and saying, all right, nobody else says a word, and if you do, you have to deal with me. That's what that was to me. And you notice nobody said a peep since we got the email from the White Sox chairman.
If the Chicago White Sox start slow, we talked to Rick Hahn about this. If they start slow, which they have for the last couple years, and they fall 8 games back, 10 games back, Robin Ventura.
You have to make a move. And that's not because I don't like Robin. I think Robin's a really good guy. He keeps the guys fresh. And they do like Robin Ventura as a guy. But results do speak for themselves. And they've been in one postseason push since he's been here. And they collapsed in 2012.
I love that that's a thing, a postseason push.
They haven't even been in the postseason.
Now there's a postseason push.
They haven't even – well, that's how I have to shape it from the South side. I mean, yeah, we were kind of close until April, and then we were done. You got to get close, and you got to be in contention. Otherwise, it's time to make a change.
Do you use Lamaze for that postseason push for these guys?
That's good.
I mean, come on.
Sammy Penjanovic, WGN Sports. Thanks for breaking down the upcoming season for baseball. Now get back to the UC.
Good luck on the text line.